WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Martha Honey is trying to untangle herself from the network of conspiracies and covert operations that swallowed up a decade of her life. In 1984, she and her husband, Tony Avergan, were both freelance journalists based in Costa Rica, covering the conflicts in Central America. In 1984, they were focusing on Nicaragua and the Contra forces that were trying to overthrow the Sandinista government. On May 30, 1984, Contra commander Eden Pastora held a press conference in his camp. He was backed by the CIA, and he was going to announce that the agency had issued an ultimatum he refused to carry out. Tony Avergan went to the press conference. The conference was cut short by a bomb explosion which wounded Pastora. Avergan was one of the journalists who was seriously wounded. Avergan and Honey spent the next decade investigating who planted the bomb. Their investigation intersected with the Iran-Contra affair. As they tried to penetrate secret networks, they found themselves accused of drug trafficking, bribing witnesses, and espionage. Martha Honey has written a new book called Hostile Acts. She told me about the day the press conference was bombed. She was at home.
Well, the reason I stayed home was that I was writing a story, which actually appeared front page of the New York Times the next day. And I was able to stay home because we had been following very closely what was going on inside the Contra movement based in Costa Rica. That's the anti-Sandinista rebels fighting covertly out of Costa Rica in the early 80s. And what we knew was going to happen at the press conference was that the main Contra leader, Eden Pastora, was going to announce that he'd been under extreme pressure from the CIA to unify his movement with the CIA-controlled and run large Contra army known as the FDN, which was fighting out of Honduras. And Pastora planned to use that press conference to denounce CIA pressure and to say that he was going to basically cut his ties with the CIA and continue fighting sort of a rebel on his own against the Sandinistas.
So what happened to the press conference?
Well, about 24 journalists from numerous countries traveled from Costa Rica up to the press conference. It was being held at a very remote Contra camp about 3 feet inside Nicaraguan territory, a place called La Panca. And 20 minutes into the press conference, as Pastora was just beginning his diatribes against the CIA, a powerful bomb exploded in the midst of the press. Three journalists died there on the spot, and about a half dozen Contras. And virtually almost all the press was injured, including my husband, Tony.
You write in your new book, Hostile Acts, that you began with the assumption that the bombing could have been the work of the left or the right. What would the motivations have been on each side?
Yes, actually, today, we now believe that there were sort of three streams which converged, three groups of plotters that converged in some way that we don't fully understand at La Panca. One was, of course, the CIA, and in many ways that was probably the most obvious because we knew that that was the Pastora was under enormous pressure from the CIA and had called the press conference specifically to denounce this pressure. The CIA had armed and financed and trained Pastora's troops as they had all of the Contra forces. But it had always been a rocky relationship because Pastora, although he was anti-communist, was also a very strong nationalist. And he basically wanted to take CIA training and supplies, but run his own war. And the CIA didn't like that, and they didn't trust him politically. They called him the 10th Commandante, a covert member, a secret member of the Sandinista Directorate. And they had basically determined that they were going to get rid of him. All of our early leads pointed towards the CIA, or more specifically towards the Oliver North network. We found, for instance, that Oliver North had made a covert trip to Costa Rica just 3 days before the bombing, that his chief aide, Robert Owen, was in Costa Rica at the time of the bombing, that a North American farmer who was really a CIA operative, John Hull, and a group of Cuban Americans out of Miami seemed to be deeply involved in plotting against Pastora. And we also found that after the bombing, there was a very sophisticated cover-up that put out a whole series of false leads, and these leads again and again named the wrong terrorist group, pointed towards the Sandinistas, but named the wrong terrorist group and the wrong bomber, and sent us and other journalists on enormous wild goose chases around Europe and Latin America searching for the wrong person. All of these leads came from the U.S. government.
But you also thought that the bomber could be from the extreme left.
We did, because clearly the Sandinistas also had reasons to hate Pastora. Pastora had been a Sandinista, had fought, been the leader of the Southern Front forces fighting against the Somoza dictatorship, had been a member of the government in the Ministry of Interior and Defense in the first year after the Sandinista triumph. And he split with the Sandinistas, and he had quite extensive popular following in Nicaragua. So there were clearly people in the leadership in Nicaragua who deeply distrusted him, considered him a traitor to their cause, and in particular Thomas Borge in the Interior Ministry. So we indeed believed right from day one that the Sandinistas also had a motive. The problem was that all the leads pointing to the Sandinistas for years didn't check out. And I just wanted to mention that the third stream, which we also began to uncover evidence of, was that of the drug cartels, that drug traffickers, which included some of the people, John Hull and some of the people working for the CIA. But the drug cartels were hoping to use the Contra forces, were indeed using the Contra forces and the Contra airstrips and so on as one of the avenues for moving drugs from Colombia into the U.S. And they wanted to expand their operations through the Contra bases in Costa Rica, and Pastora was blocking that. He was saying no to his pilots and to other people who wanted to expand the drug trafficking through Costa Rica. So the cartel and some of the people working for the cartel in Costa Rica as well had a motive for killing Pastora.
As you got involved in the investigation, you started to learn more about America's covert support of the Contras. Were you onto the story before the Iran-Contra story broke?
Yes, we were. As I think, you know, I don't want to say that we were the only ones. Obviously, there were a number of journalists in Central America. In fact, in many ways, the Contra war was kind of lying there, waiting to be picked up and reported on. But we had been following, since our arrival in Costa Rica in 83, we had been following very, very closely Eden Pastora's operations and really knew that the CIA had a dozen or so people right inside Pastora's organization. We knew where the airdrops were being made. We knew who the CIA collaborators in the Costa Rican government were, what the CIA network in the embassy was, and so on. We were quite well informed and had a number of excellent sources. And after the bombing, began investigating who could have been responsible and basically began unraveling even more this ball of wax that later became Iran-Contra, and began following this trail from the Contra camps and the collaborators in Costa Rica, and eventually finding that it led up to the basement of the White House and Oliver North's office.
Now, you had a lawsuit in which you sued several CIA officials, former CIA officials, U.S. military officers, and arms merchants. And this lawsuit was kind of a conspiracy thing. It basically, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it charged that this group of people had been conspiring over a series of decades, and that this secret team had worked together since the 1950s, planning things ranging from the Bay of Pigs operation to anti-Castro activities. They ran the secret war in Laos, assassinated political opponents in other countries to stabilize Chile. You write in your book that you were actually troubled by this suit and by the way it was pursued. And why were you part of this suit if it was troubling? What troubled you?
Yes, I'm glad you asked this question, because I would like to try to explain. We found ourselves under enormous pressure and risk in Costa Rica, being accused of being spies and receiving death threats. At one point, we were mailed a packet of cocaine and accused of being drug traffickers and so on. And we finally decided, because we couldn't get anybody in the U.S. government to really actively investigate the bombing or in the Costa Rican government, that perhaps we could use the power of the U.S. courts to try to, one, get the people who were tormenting us sort of off of our back, kind of put them on notice that we were not going to take this, and also use the court system to try to learn more than we were able to do through interviews and so on, to use the process of discovery and taking depositions and so on to try to gain more information about what was really going on, what the extent of these covert operations were. We talked to, sort of long distance since we were in Costa Rica, made contact with a number of lawyers, and It was only Daniel Sheehan and the Christic Institute who said that they indeed could take the lawsuit, would like to take the lawsuit, would like to handle a lawsuit like this. And they claimed that they had enormous amounts of information already compiled on what they called the secret team, on the people we were looking at and more, other people, a number of whose people whose names we didn't at that point know, and they had not shown up in our investigations in Costa Rica. So we sort of hitched our star to the Christic Institute, and it was, as you mentioned, kind of a troubling relationship right from the beginning, one where we felt particularly clear that our interest was trying to uncover the misdeeds in Central America, what current U.S. policy was involved in Central America. We did agree to go along with the lawsuit, and it was a kind of stormy relationship, and eventually it was thrown out by the courts, and we had enormous sanctions put against the law firm and the attorney Dan Sheehan and ourselves by the court, saying that this was a frivolous lawsuit. We have now, you know, clearly broken with Dan Sheehan. In fact, I've just come back from Los Angeles, where we actually had a trial against him, trying to get the Christic files, the files from the lawsuit, which are supposed to belong to the clients, and we won that trial. And all the files from the lawsuits are being returned to Washington, and we're going to house them at the National Security Archive, where we feel they should properly be housed.
Do you feel that your lawsuit ended up feeding conspiracy theorists?
Well, I think that there is a tendency on the part of certain segments of the U.S. public to believe in conspiracy theories. And certainly we were involved in, there was a conspiracy that plotted the Lapanca bombing and plotted other operations in Central America. But I don't believe that it was the same secret team that went back decades and was involved in all the sort of skullduggery of U.S. operations, clandestine operations going back to the Bay of Pigs and perhaps even earlier. So I think that it was unfortunate the way it was crafted as such a sort of, in some ways, concise and also long-term conspiracy, because I think that distorted reality, and that really what we need to see is that these covert operations are always done in a conspiratorial way. There is a group of people who plan them, but that group of people is shifting. And what we really need to focus on are the institutions in our governmental institutions which allow such covert operations and such conspiracies to take place.
My guest is journalist Martha Honey. She and her husband, journalist Tony Avergan, spent a decade investigating who bombed a Contra press conference in which Avergan was seriously injured. Honey has written a new book called Hostile Acts. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with journalist Martha Honey. In your investigation and lawsuit, you were pursuing the CIA connection to the Lapanca bombing. But when the bomber was actually discovered, it turned out he was linked to the Sandinistas, to Cuba, and to some other left-wing groups. Tell us something about him and what those links were.
Yes. Always, all the years until just about beginning about 2 years ago, we were the one big missing piece in our puzzle of who was responsible for the Lapanca bombing was the true identity of the bomber. As I mentioned, he had posed as a Danish journalist traveling with a stolen passport and using a false identity. And he had disappeared. He'd been uninjured and had disappeared afterwards. We were given various descriptions of him by people working either with the Contras in Costa Rica or people supporting the Contras in Miami. And we were told that he was an Arab or perhaps Jewish, that he was from the Middle East, and that he spoke Spanish with a South American accent. But we never knew for sure who this man was. And it was finally last summer that a number of bits of information came together to conclusively identify this guy through fingerprints, through identification from his family, and through identification from his former sort of comrades in arms, that he was someone named Vital Roberto Gaguin, who was a leftist Argentine who had fought with one of the Argentine left-wing groups and had come up to Nicaragua after the triumph and had been integrated into Nicaragua's security apparatus, Ministry of Interior, into a very secret unit which was known as the Fifth Directorate, headed by a Cuban and ultimately headed by Thomas Borje, the Minister of the Interior, and that the function of this unit, which was made up of a group of Argentine leftists and other people from Basque separatists, from ETA and various other leftist nationalities from around the world, the function of this sort of international group was assassinations, terrorism, spying, all the sorts of operations that we had uncovered in Costa Rica that the CIA was involved in with their network that was headed by John Hull and Cuban Americans. So it was kind of the flip side of the Ali North network that we found in Costa Rica indeed existed within the Sandinista apparatus, specifically within the Ministry of the Interior. And that this fellow, Gauguin, was working for this unit, and that he came to Costa Rica, hooked up with a Swedish journalist who was himself a sort of spy for the Sandinistas in Cuba, and that he carried the bomb to the press conference.
Now, how did you feel when you found out that the bomber was actually not with the CIA, but with the Sandinistas?
Well, it was an enormous shock. As I said earlier, all of the leads that we had had, and there were a dozen or more very concrete leads that had pointed towards the Sandinistas, and we had investigated all of them thoroughly. Every one of them had fallen apart. It had not been true. We had been told that he was a leftist Uruguayan working for the Sandinistas, that he was a PLO guy connected to the Sandinistas, on and on and on. All of these leads had fallen apart. And as I said, also, we had this enormous body of evidence which linked the CIA and the Oliver North Network not only into the bombing but into the cover-up afterwards. So this came as a real shock to us. But we are convinced that it's true, that indeed this was the bomber. Now, the question that we're left with is why, if this was a pure Sandinista action, why was it that the U.S. government put out one phony lead after another all these years? It could be incompetence, but we also now know that the CIA had intelligence operatives working deep inside Sandinista's Ministry of the Interior, as well as within Pastora's organization. So it seems to us unlikely that they were not aware of really what happened, who was responsible. And so the question is, why didn't they put out this information, which would have been a real political coup for the Reagan administration, because the Reagan administration was saying as loud as they could that the Sandinistas were terrorists, that they were committing human rights violations, and what better way to prove that than to show that they were killing innocent journalists? What we're left with is the suspicion that somehow this bombing was convenient and perhaps was organized by both the CIA and the Sandinistas Interior Ministry officials, that it was something that was either organized by one and known about by the other and they decided to let it happen, or in fact that both sides had a hand in it, as well as we believe the drug cartels, that they also had a hand in it. We feel convinced, and we've talked with, sort of the best minds that we can find in terms of people who understand the intelligence community and counterterrorism and so on, that that probably the CIA didn't disclose the truth because it would have compromised one or more of their deep cover operatives, and that they didn't want to take that chance.
Do you ever feel that you're in quicksand, and the deeper you get, the deeper in you sink, the more difficult it is to get out?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I now feel that we may never know the truth, that it's probably going to take somebody coming forward and just saying, look, this is really how it was, and laying it out, and that person may never come forward.
Do you have friends who have tried to convince you, give up, go on with your life, drop it, get back to your journalism career?
Yes.
Because you're never going to find out what really happened, and people are going to think that you're crazy.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. And I think that, that some of those suggestions, particularly a decade afterwards, are sensible. And that, in a sense, my doing this book, Hostile Acts, was, at least for me, sort of a psychological finishing of that part of our lives. I mean, a way of kind of putting it down on paper and trying now, in many ways, yes, we are moving on. We've moved from Costa Rica. We're living in Washington, and we're involved in a whole host of other projects. But this continues to gnaw at us, and we continue to, you know, when we can, and when new leads turn up, to follow them, and we are doing that, you know, on a regular basis.
I've spoken to a lot of people over the years, journalists who have covered covert operations and, you know, government intelligence groups and stuff, and they get into that whole hall of mirrors. But they're doing it as journalists. They're not players in the story, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Now, you've become kind of trapped in this hall of mirrors because in trying to investigate it, and since your husband was one of the people who was injured in the bombing, you've become so entwined in the story, and I wonder, what does it do to your mind to be in the middle of this hall of mirrors where there are agents and maybe counter-agents and maybe three different sets of covert operations working, and you can't sort things out, and 10 years later questions still remain unanswered. Does it turn you paranoid? Is it hard to trust anybody after this? I just wonder what it does to you psychologically.
Yeah, I think obviously psychologically it's not been very good for us. And as I said, one of the reasons that I wanted to write the book was kind of a catharsis to sort of get it out. This is an unusual circumstance because it was a terrorist act that took place at a press conference. And so instantly we became not only victims but also investigators. And we've always had this dual role, and it is troubling. I don't think we've gotten to the point where we're suspicious of everybody. We do feel, and we're not sure who it is, we feel obviously we've been fed some bad information over the years. We know some of those sources, but we're now trying to sort of go back through sources and say, now who could have lied to us? Because clearly some of the things we were told were just not true.
Martha Honey, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. Thanks.
Martha Honey is the author of the new book, Hostile Acts. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.